all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense. It's Friday, January 20th, 2023. It's another beautiful day on Lake Wissota. Got most of the snow moved out of the way. Looks to be about 5 inches or so that we got here. Some folks got quite a bit more in the far northern parts of the state. Hope you all got it cleared and are moving along your way safely today. Coming up this morning, let's see, at 6:30, we're going to talk about how a small minority of congressional Republicans, who themselves represent a minority of American voters, want to play a game of chicken with the national economy. I mean, remember, we have just climbed out of a COVID recession, and we've climbed out of it quite nicely. Unemployment is at a 50-year low. Things are on the right track. Inflation's coming down. And yet, this small block of right-wing politicians is preparing to steer the country into default, and that is something that will affect you. It will affect every American through higher interest rates and prices if they get away with it. Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kiev Akil talks about the folly of refusing to pay for debts that Congress has already incurred. We're not even talking about new spending, but spending you already authorized, but now are refusing to pay for. Then at 7:15, we'll be joined by State Assembly Representative Lisa Subek to explain how the state Republican flat tax plan is nothing more than a massive tax cut for the super wealthy, paid for on the backs of the middle class and low-income families. And we will also look ahead to next Tuesday's State of the State address by Governor Tony Evers. At 6:50, we will meet with Courier Newsroom political editorial director Carolyn Fidler, ostensibly to talk about the week's political headlines, but since it's also at the same time that we do this day in music history, we'll probably go off on another tangent as we usually do. Our regular Friday 7:30 guest, Mark Jacob, is out today. He will be back next Friday. And so Dan Schumacher, who normally joins us Fridays at 7:50, is going to join us a little earlier at 7:30 for the full half hour. He's not just a Grateful Dead fan. He's not just the UW-Eau Claire athletic director who gets to play celebrity guest sportscaster with us on Friday mornings, but a very big fan of David Crosby, who passed away, a true legend in rock history, folk rock, you name it. He had a front row seat to basically everything at the beginning, and not just watching it, participating in it, writing, performing. And we'll talk quite a bit about that. We're going to play music from him, either written by him or performed by him, with Crosby, Stills, Nash, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, The Birds, and so much more, all to come today. So that's what's all ahead. Along with your phone calls, if you'd like to reach us, you can call 844-967-2789, at which point Aaron Zommers will get on the line, say hello, and get you all routed. Aaron, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty well, more awake than I have been at this time. I'm starting to readjust to being awake this early. How about yourself?
You had to readjust to it. That's right, because we had a little time off. Yeah, I could see where that would be an adjustment for you. You know, I can't put it any other way. As a now older person, being up early is just kind of my default status. So, you know, every so often, Kroot will check in with me and say, you know, how are things going with that early hour? I'm like, I'm good with it. It's fine. I mean, my wife leaves for work by 6 a.m. and we're just the early birds. The only thing missing are some cows to milk. And since Sherry used to milk 72 of them every morning before getting on the school bus, I don't think she really needs to have that. So we're good with the early morning, but I totally understand folks of your age not being adjusted. But hopefully you didn't have to do as much to the car as you did yesterday when you had to get, what, you know, a couple, 3 inches of snow off it.
Oh, no, definitely not. Today, I went outside and looked at my car, and I'm like, what? It's totally clear. How is this legal at this time of year?
It's so true. Before I forget, because I almost forgot in the 6 o'clock hour yesterday, so I'm going to make mention of it right now, that the Civic Media network of radio stations is growing to the point where the stations are doing something very big to celebrate, giving away $1 million in advertising to various small businesses all across Wisconsin. Here's how it works. Next week, Thursday, January 26th at 9 a.m., you, on behalf of your small business, can fill out an application for a piece of the giveaway and for your chance to work with the team here to create a radio advertising campaign promoting your business across our statewide network, where applicable, for free. So go to civicmedia.us/million for all the rules, and look for more information on the Civic Media Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages as well. All right, let's take a break, take a look at headlines and such right after this break. You're up north. Wait a minute. What time is it?
Just about 6:12, so we still have a minute.
Didn't I just get done saying that I adapt to the early morning hours better than you? Didn't I just get done saying how wide awake I am at this point?
Yeah. We all make mistakes in the heat of passion.
Oh, boy. Well, at this point, I think with the 20 seconds now that I have left before I really should take a commercial break, I should probably just sign off and tell folks I'm going to go back to bed and, get me up around 11 or so. I'm going to have crute like hours for the rest of the day. No, I really will stick around this time and give you a little extra jingle music to listen to right now on Up North News Radio. Seems appropriate that as we're remembering David Crosby and the music that he played, that this be an appropriate song to come in and talk about, who's doing right by the children in Wisconsin and their public educations and their family lives. You see that through a state budget and other decisions that are made by people like State Assembly Representative Lisa Subek, a Madison Democrat, who also is the chair of the Assembly Democratic Caucus. Representative Subek, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Now, this is where I get a little special prerogative, not just as a host, but as a former legislator, that I think a lot of hosts would say, what does it mean that you're the caucus chair? I'm actually going to volunteer that answer, and then you can feel free to disagree with me. There's majority leaders and there's minority leaders, and you think of them as the head of the Democrats or the Republicans in the Assembly or the Senate. The caucus chair basically has to run the meetings when all of the Democrats and or all of the Republicans get in a room together. So when all the Assembly Dems get in a room together, you chair that meeting as caucus chair. And I say all that just to say that I think you have the most thankless job in the state capitol of trying to herd cats as a caucus chair for the state assembly.
Well, I am fortunate that we have a pretty good team in the Assembly Democrats. So as much as sometimes it feels like herding cats, it actually is not so bad because our team is very strong and works together very well. And, I would argue that while not in the state capitol, the most thankless job in politics is probably our school board members.
Oh, without a doubt. And are still faced with the uncertainty of what this legislature will work out with Governor Evers. And so we're going to get into the state of the state and budget matters in a bit. But earlier I mentioned that the state health and or the U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra is going to be in Wisconsin making appearances today. He was in Minnesota previously. And in Minnesota, there have been some great contrasts. And the same can be said in Michigan with Democrats taking over the legislature there. Just to name a couple of them, Democrats in the Michigan legislature have codified LGBTQ rights, protected election workers, repealed union busting so-called right to work rules, and ensured union wages in construction. In Minnesota yesterday, with the HHS secretary's visit, they codified abortion rights into state law. And people want to say, well, why are you sitting in Wisconsin trashing Wisconsin? We're not trashing Wisconsin. We love living here, but it means there's still a lot of work to do, Representative Subek. And, you're in there trying to do it, but it's a long list.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Wisconsin has spent many years heading the wrong direction on abortion, as some of our neighbors, Minnesota and Illinois, have ensured that people who are facing unplanned or untenable pregnancies have places to turn. And really, it's an issue of our basic freedom. It's about the ability to make decisions about when and if you are going to have children, and to do that in consultation with your family and your physician and your faith without interference from politicians.
It's the kind of thing that is a real issue that frankly could and should come before voters. Governor Evers has suggested it. Republican Senator Ron Johnson even suggested it. And yet your Republican colleagues this week have been working on a referendum related to whether able-bodied childless adults should have to work for their benefits, when that's already on state law. You and I both know that that is solely there to gin up turnout in the state Supreme Court race. So tell folks about how you guys, in a way, just kind of turned the tables and said, oh, you want to use the referendum process? What did you guys all talk about this week?
Sure. So this week in both the Senate and the Assembly, we offered amendments to, or substitutes, as we call them in the legislature. So that's when you take a bill and you don't just amend a few words, but you replace it wholesale. We offered substitute amendments that would have put the issue of abortion on the ballot and would have asked voters simply, should we overturn our 1849, now remember that's pre-Civil War, criminal abortion ban, and restore Roe in Wisconsin, essentially. I mean, what we're looking to do is to restore the state of affairs here in Wisconsin to where it was before Roe was overturned. And, you know, as your listeners may know, Sunday is the, I guess, commemoration of Roe now. I'm not sure if it's still called an anniversary once it's been repealed. But so we offered an amendment that would just say to the voters, right, it wouldn't actually change anything at this point. We're still working to do that. But would simply say to the voters, you have a voice, tell us what you think. Should we overturn our 1849 law and restore the rights that we had under Roe here in the state of Wisconsin? And the Republicans wouldn't even hear the amendment. I mean, they voted to rule it, not germane, as they call it, which means basically they're afraid to even take it up. You know, we made them vote on whether or not to take it up because they wanted to just rule it not germane and move on. But, you know, I think this speaks to how much Republicans don't want to be talking about this issue because they know they're in the wrong. And they know they are not on the side of public opinion on this.
No, they're not. There's long been broad bipartisan consensus among Wisconsinites that abortion rights should, in fact, be protected for women. Now, even though Republicans turned down your generous offer to put the 1849 ban up for referendum, I mean, we both know it is that is essentially still what's happening. There is a referendum on abortion rights in Wisconsin, but it's through the state Supreme Court election that's coming up. And again, for folks not familiar, the background really quick is that conservatives control the state Supreme Court 4-3. They have for a long time, but a conservative justice is retiring. And so if a progressive candidate were to win, then progressives would have 4-3 control over the state Supreme Court. And Representative Subek, what would that mean? It's not just for abortion rights. It would be a real difference maker in Wisconsin.
Sure, this election could be a game changer. If we had a fair Supreme Court, we could have fair maps for those district lines. And that's probably one of the biggest issues we have been talking about for the last 10 years, and we'll be talking about for another 10 years if we don't see a change in the Supreme Court. Because the reality is, well, I can't tell you how they would rule if another maps case was brought before them. A fair maps case has a fair shot. And what that would mean for the average person is, instead of a bunch of politicians drawing their district lines in a way in which they choose you, they choose who they want to represent, essentially rigging their elections for the foreseeable future, that would mean that you all would have the chance to really choose your own representatives, have the fairest elections possible, and have many districts. It could mean so much on so many other things. The reality is, every election cycle, I hear myself saying, this is the most important election of our lives, Pat, and I'm sure that you've heard it and maybe even said it yourself before. And people begin to think we don't mean it, but I got to tell you, the stakes keep getting higher. And in November, I talked about it as the most important election in our lives, certainly re-electing Governor Evers and making some good positive gains was really important. Now this one is even more important. The stakes really are even higher.
We are talking with Representative Lisa Subek, chair of the Assembly Democratic Caucus, about matters that have come up this week in the legislature, the state Supreme Court election, and things that are going to come up in the future. And that's where we're going to turn to the state budget and the budget surplus. And I'm going to be hearing this clip for the first time. I've simply seen it posted and, shall we say, mocked. This is Wisconsin Assembly Speaker Robin Voss apparently describing some kind of a fantasy scenario where people win the lottery, become multimillionaires, and can remain on Medicaid, and that's why Republicans are like they are. Let's listen to Speaker Voss and try to decipher this.
Wisconsin has been a national leader in so many ways. Preliminary data shows that we have more people on Badger Care today than we did before the pandemic. Why? Because we don't even ask people what their income level is to qualify for free health insurance from the government. So on day one, you qualify. On day two, you win the lottery. You're a multimillionaire. You still get the benefits from the state. How is that right? It's not.
How is that a point? It's not. I mean, does he want real-time monitoring of your income?
I mean, show me the millionaire who's sitting on BadgerCare after winning the lottery. It's just not happening. I mean, this is the boogeyman scenario. We heard a lot from Speaker Voss at the beginning of the session about he wanted a new era of bipartisanship, right? Mm-hmm. Everything was going to be kumbaya. And I remember hearing that session after session after session, but I kept getting asked by people. I'd go to meetings, go to interviews. People would say to me, what do you think of this new era of bipartisanship? Is this going to be a great opportunity? And I said, well, time will tell. It took, I don't know what, a couple of weeks before he turned his tables. I would venture to say new Voss, same as the old Voss, because this is exactly what we have seen from Robin Voss in the past. I am hopeful that we'll find some areas of common ground, but if you were shouting partisan rhetoric from the rooftops just weeks after you were making overtures about bipartisanship, it's hard to believe that, it seems a little disingenuous to me, and I hope maybe we'll see something different going forward. But, point blank, this is about, again, as you said, it's about an election, and it is about firing up their base. They love to tell boogeyman stories about, what people who are getting benefits are doing. The reality is I know those folks are hardworking individuals who are working hard in our cities and our communities, who are trying to get by. I worked with many of them prior to coming into the legislature when I worked in the homelessness system. And, the family I was working with were working hard and they were using Badger Care because they just didn't make enough money to get by. And we should be doing real things to address poverty, not demonizing and punishing people because their wages are too low.
And that takes us to what, Governor Tony Evers will be proposing, things like that or other things in the State of the State address next Tuesday. And then he'll give more details in a budget address next month. But in terms of what you're going to hear in the State of the State, now we've already heard multiple speeches from him during his first term in office, but what kinds of things are you expecting to hear that would give you reason to believe, maybe this idea or that idea, at least part of it could get through the legislature and be implemented?
Sure. So, certainly we have heard from both Republicans and the governor about the importance of shared revenue. Obviously, we have to see what a plan looks like. I don't know that the Republicans will necessarily be at the same starting point, but I think that that is an area where there's some agreement that there's a need and something that that Democrats have been calling for years. And it's good to see our Republican colleagues come along. I suspect, certainly hope we may hear the governor talk a little bit about that. I think we know a little bit from his plan for the surplus that he has put out. A little bit of what we might expect to hear. He has put forward a plan for a 10% middle class tax cut targeted toward working families. Completely differs from what the Republicans want to do, which is big cuts for people at the top, a pittance for people, down the road a little bit here to the average family. The governor wants to do a 10% tax cut for the average Wisconsin family. restoring the homestead tax, repealing our mandatory minimum markup on motor fuel. I could go on and on. But more importantly, I think that the governor is going to be talking about our values, ensuring that every child has a great education, ensuring that everybody has access to health care, and ensuring the security of all of us here in Wisconsin.
It's so important. And again, hopefully Republicans before June 30th can pass a budget that shows they share at least some of those values. Representative Lisa Subek, thank you so much for being with us today. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Coming up next, UW-Eau Claire Athletic Director Dan Schumacher will talk about sports and the passing of David Crosby after this. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
I like to teach the world to sing. Sing with me.
Yes, I know we played this in the last hour as well, but that was because it was a Coca-Cola jingle, and we were talking about Coke versus Pepsi at Culver's. But it seemed to be the right song to play again about teaching the world to sing and music education and the healing power of music, which takes us right into this week's Hometown Health segment with our friend, Dr. Kristen Lyerly. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Great. I mean, I'm looking outside. The snow is kind of tapered off here on Lake Wissota. Got about 3 inches or snow, so it's got that special magical holiday feel, which, you know, in a day or two is going to turn into the dread of where the hell is spring. But right now it looks nice. So I'm okay.
You just got back from Costa Rica.
Oh, yeah.
Enjoy the snow for a little while.
I am not looking for pity at all on that. You see this tan? You see this tan? This is a happy tan. Tell us about your friends and about something called Doctors in Recital and what it does for physicians and for music education in the Fox Valley.
Yeah, so this week on Hometown Health, we feature a beautiful local program that means so much to me. It highlights the intersection of music and health in a big community building way in the greater Green Bay area. It's called Doctors in Recital. This year, the show will be at the Widener Center, which is on the UWGB campus on Saturday the 28th. So not this Saturday, but next Saturday. And it is truly an evening of musical excellence. It's put on by physicians in the Green Bay area who donate their time and their talent to raise money for local causes. Each act in the show is headlined by a physician with a passion for music and a commitment to patient care. And lots of other healthcare professionals share the stage as backup musicians and choir members. It's great for all of us. But the coolest thing is, since 2006, Doctors in Recital has raised over, catch this, $500,000 for local charities. This year, they are raising money for the Birder School of Performing Arts, the Brown County Community Gardens Program, and Green Bay East High School's Choral Department. So with all of that, I am so excited this morning to welcome my dear friends, Lucinda Roberts, who is the executive producer, and Kim Shefchik, who is the board chair for Doctors in Recital. Ladies, welcome.
Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
So Lucinda, let's start out with just the basics. Where did Doctors in Recital come from? What's the history of this really interesting, important program?
Sure. Well, I was working on a master's in music business, and I was in New York, affiliated with Steinway. And I was in one of those like beautiful New York boardrooms. I was the only woman, and there's like 15 men, and they're all in suits. And I had this, I remember I had this really cute outfit, and the room was like 50 degrees because it was all men with their suit coats on, and I'm freezing like crazy. And they started talking about different programming and opportunities to really highlight Steinway pianos because it was a Steinway perspective. And they talked about what they call the physician's recital. And as I sat there, you know, I'm a woman of faith, and I heard God's voice say to me, you can do this. And I thought, oh boy, I don't know. No, you can do this. You should do this. So when I came back after classes, then I met with my boss at the time from a local music store, and presented it to him. And he said, nope, don't want you to do that. I just want you to do something like at somebody's home. And I'm like, oh, darn. And so I went to who he wanted me to ask, and it was a physician. And that physician said, oh, no, I can't do that. I don't want everybody in my house. And I'm like, awesome, because I don't want to do it either. I want to do the recital. So I went back to my boss and I said, the doctor said, no. I said, I'm going to do the recital. And my boss said, well, okay, then. And so that was kind of how it started. And I just started making cold calls to physicians that I knew, played, you know, that I had gotten, you know, their names, and just started calling and saying, I'd like to do this. And would you be interested? And it was a little scary at first, but it was fun. And our first year was in 2007 for the performance. And we had 9 performances, and we did it at the Widener in their small venue. And we had about 145 people that attended. And now, as of last Sunday, we've sold over 600 tickets already. And there's more that have been sold since then. And so we could easily have over 1500 at the show this year. So we've come a long way, baby.
That's how divine inspiration works, baby. Yeah. So, Kim, when you are asking physicians to join in, are they reluctant or are they excited about it?
Well, if you're Kristen Meyerly, they're reluctantly excited.
That's fair. That is fair.
Actually, you know, it's amazing to me how many physicians have a background in music. I mean, I think if you look at the research on brains and how there's such a intersection of the sciences and music and the arts, and it's a beautiful thing how it comes together so often, whether it's their outlet for relieving stress or whether they actually, like some of the people in our show, have degrees in music or have done music performance. And there are a few though that we kind of have to drag a bit because they're just not sure of where they fit in, but it's just amazing how Lucinda gets it all put together, and everyone seems to have a great niche and star shining moment.
And it's true. There are a couple Juilliard trained physicians who are performing. You think of doctors as just doctors, but doctors tend to have a lot of breadth in their background, and music and medicine fit together so beautifully, which is why this works so well.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I can testify to that, being married to a physician myself who played both piano and saxophone, was in marching band, was the church organist for a time. And that, again, it's making different parts of the brain work at once. And Kristen, as you know full well, multitasking has to be kind of top of mind. And you have to be as creative as you are analytical in practicing medicine. But, you know, again, the point of it being that, yes, these physicians, these healthcare workers who appreciate music are getting together, but you're doing it to benefit music education, because a music education benefits more than physicians. It can benefit anybody in their later life, not just for entertainment's sake, but just, again, getting your mind thinking in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And think about, you know, all of the things we've all been through in the last 3 years and how music has really created a safe space, especially for young people to stay connected. And I can see that in my own children who, you know, the pandemic was hard on a lot of other activities, but somehow they were still able to keep doing music because it's a solo act and it's a group act, and it allows them to stay creative and have some joy and feel like they're contributing. So
mm-hmm. It's really true. I know in my life, music has been that place where I can always go to where I'm at my wit's end, or I need a little peace, or maybe I have too much energy and I need to burn some of that off. Music fulfills all of those different places. And, you know, Doctors in Recital has a tagline where you make a difference by making music. So we are using music to make a difference in other avenues. Lucinda, tell us more about how Doctors in Recital does that.
Sure. Well, we've always had a focus on supporting a local, what we lovingly call a mom and pop type charity, an organization that perhaps wouldn't qualify for the big foundation, you know, grants out there, but where a smaller grant can still make a significant difference. You know, I know of one year that was probably third year out that we were able to raise close to $50,000 that year. And they put that into an account and set it up like an endowment, and that they're still using those monies today, you know, and, you know, 10 years later easily to support women and children. So we have actually created a whole grant process. It wasn't always that way when it first started. Today we have a grant process. So we have a community grant recipient, which is a larger grant amount. And this year it's the community gardens. And then we have two music ed focused grant recipients. And the music ed piece was the brainstorm of a physician years back who said, none of us would be doing any of this if we hadn't had music when we were in school. And what a difference music makes for students. And, you know, I work at East High School with the Fine Arts Institute, and we have a lot of students that are coming, you know, from less capable settings that they don't always have the same opportunities. And so providing opportunities like this in a school setting, sometimes it gets them to school. So then we can help support their continued education and encourage them. And so, you know, we do make a difference by making music. You know, I can put a plug in too that we've had physicians play in a jazz band with our students from East. And there's a mentoring that goes on that way too, which is just really cool. And the physicians have said how much they enjoy interacting with the students and encouraging them. So it makes a big difference.
So many different ways it makes a difference. Mm-hmm. How do you get in on this grant process? If you are part of a local organization and you want to be a benefactor of this beautiful program, how do you apply?
Sure. Well, Kim, would you like to talk to that?
Yeah, we are. We finalize our grant application and we go live with our next year's grant the night of the show. So you can go to our website, doctorsinrecital.org. And you will see, if you are interested, live on January 28th at the end of the show, that you can apply. It's not a complicated application, but really just showing how you can make a difference in our community. And then we have a process where our board reviews the applications, and then we have interviews to our top few candidates and make our selection. Hopefully we'll have a selection by the end of March, early April, because then we jump right back to getting to work for 2024, getting sponsors. We look to area businesses to help us, you know, subsidize the cost of being in the Widener. It's a beautiful facility, and we're so grateful that we have that in our community as well. So that's a huge part of our show also.
And I, as always, you know, everything has, I have to make everything political at some point or another. We wouldn't be doing this if we valued music education and the arts as much as we should. And yet all we hear from certain political circles is that schools have to be cut way back to just reading, writing, arithmetic, you know, and virtually nothing else. And that is to say that that's not necessarily the genesis of this, but that is a mindset that is prevalent and needs, I would say confronted is the right word, about the benefits of all of the arts in education for everybody.
I can just throw a quick point in that our one, we have a fine arts pathway, and Webster Elementary is the elementary school. And we have violin and piano lessons that students choose which instrument they want to pursue at the end of first grade, and they have lessons from second through fifth grade. And we started having students do their math pieces when they came back from their music lessons. And we actually saw an increase in math scores after that. So we actually have tangible proof that the music stimulates the brain and gets them thinking in ways that they haven't before. And the proof is in the pudding. Their math scores increased. And that was something that we like to crow about, because it is proof that the arts and music make a difference in education.
They sure do. And you see that proof right here on the ground. But I mean, there's tons of data that supports it as well. Yeah. So can you give us a quick sneak peek in the 1 minute we have left of some of the great acts that we're going to see on the 28th?
Well, we're going to see an Elton John number. We're seeing a choir We've got a ladies vocal group doing Dancing Queen, complete with cool costumes and choreography. We've got someone doing a bare naked ladies number about what she might do if she had $1 million. Kristen Lyerly, folks. That's awesome.
That's all I was waiting for. I was just waiting to see what she would do and what she would wear. And this, just please be sure to get it on video for us. Lucinda Roberts, Kim Shefchik, again, Doctors in Recital. Thank you so very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. It was
fun. Thank you, ladies.
All right. Thanks so much. And we'll have Hometown Health again next Thursday at 7:30. Thanks, Kristen.
You bet.
Luke Mathers coming up right after this. You're up north. What do you think, Carolyn Fiddler? Should we just do karaoke versions of this for the rest of the segment?
You know what? I'm good. I've never been the biggest Jimmy Buffett fan, so.
Well, those of us who are, you know, are celebrating that on this day in 1997, Jimmy released his 7th studio album. There's the title track from Changes in Latitude, Changes in Attitude. Also featured Margaritaville. Did it say 1997? 1977.
I was about to say, I'm pretty sure that song's been around longer.
Yeah. Margaritaville peaked at number 8, Buffett's highest entry on the Billboard Hot 100. We have been talking a lot about David Crosby. Crosby, Stills, Nash. We'll get back to that throughout the rest of the program here. But before we get into the rest of history and music history, Courier Newsroom political editorial director Carolyn Fiddler joins us as often on Fridays. How are you?
I'm good. And this is Nebula for anyone watching.
Nebula, if you're watching on the video screen, the video feed from Carolyn Fiddler has been hijacked by a small furry animal. And like most cats could not care less, you know, whether they're interrupting something or not.
She wants to meet all your listeners. She loves,
there you
she
go. So we just finished playing back our interview with Kia Vakil. We obviously talked a lot about the debt ceiling fight that seems to be consuming so much of the oxygen in Washington, D.C. these days. And yet things probably not a lot is likely to happen for weeks or months. So they can't keep talking about that every day. Where do they put their focus next to attempt to earn a paycheck?
Oh, Republicans, who knows? Probably Biden investigations. They're trying to make hay out of the document thing, which is, you know, not a thing. You know, these things were mislaid. They've been returned. It's, you know, there's no there. But
what do you make of the story that Democrats are almost giddy that the Oversight Committee has been stacked and is essentially a rogues gallery or a clown show, that you've got everyone, Gosar and Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene, they're all on oversight. It's almost like Speaker McCarthy needed their votes to become speaker, but by putting them all on this committee to do investigations, he knows they're not going to be taken seriously.
That's exactly right. that's perfect, because yes, that's exactly the situation. Like no one can take them seriously. They won't allow it functionally because of who they are.
Right. Now, unfortunately, what it also means is they will be the stars or the center ring of the circus, if you will, in right-wing media. I mean, anything they do is going to be nonstop coverage, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, it's I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. It's like the Fox Newsification of Congress. Hannity's already been to the U.S. House to film a show, and he's going to keep coming back, and it's really weird and wrong. But
I think any effort to bring Americans together on a single set of facts and information, I think it's going to get a lot tougher if it wasn't already impossible already. Hey, it was on this day 70 years ago that 72% of all TV sets in the country on this day in 1953 were watching I Love Lucy watch the episode where Lucy gives birth, something unheard of, you know, in TV at the time. Isn't that just one of the great examples of how far we have come, that, you know, it used to be the married couples had to sleep in separate beds with a nightstand between them, and, you know, they didn't want to show a pregnant lady. I can't I don't even know what the equivalent would be in TV today. It just tells you how far we've come.
Yeah, no idea.
I don't think can ever be an equivalent. I don't think there can ever be an equivalent to that on today's TV, just because of how much it's changed and how much stuff is out there.
I think so. I think what you do now is you see how much more you can, you know, shock somebody with, you know, things that we normally wouldn't want to see on TV. Another thing that did put people around TVs was every landing on the moon. And it was on this day in 1930 that Buzz Aldrin was born. He is 93 years old today. Wow. Second man on the moon, oldest of the four living moonwalkers. Birthdays include Paul Stanley from Kiss is 71 years old today. Let's see. Let's go to Aaron's going to play some Bebop Baby from Ricky Nelson. Ricky Nelson, Mina, again, we're going back to 50s TV, the Ozzie and Harriet and their little boy, Ricky Nelson, who then became a, you know, a pop idol at the time. I guess. Well, no, not a boy band, but I don't know. Apparently, again, I know Justin Bieber. That's who I'm trying to think of. Ricky Nelson was the Justin Bieber of the late 1950s. How's that?
Okay, I think I'm a little too old for Justin Bieber, actually.
Oh my goodness. Okay, let's go to something more fun then, and we'll hear the Beatles playing "I Saw Her Standing There," because it was on this day in 1964 that the Beatles released their first American album, Meet the Beatles. We talked about "I Want to Hold Your Hand" earlier in the week, but "I Saw Her Standing There." It was another one of their big hits. Let's listen in the background to "Tangled Up in Blue," as Bob Dylan, on this day in 1975, released "Blood on the Tracks," and "Tangled Up in Blue" was the big single from that. It's one of the few, I think there's only two, maybe three Bob Dylan songs that, you know, I'll listen to all the way through, but not more than that, I'm pretty sure.
I'm kind of on the same page for what it's worth.
Yeah.
With the exception of things that he's written that other people have sung.
All right. Well, let's see. What are we up to here? Oh, okay. Now we're into Carolyn Fiddler territory. Uh-oh. 1983 from Def Leppard releasing their third album.
Oh, wow.
All right. All right. Where were you where were you on the dance floor when this was coming out?
Nowhere. I was a tiny, tiny baby.
It was 1983. Okay. See, this is where I talk about being on the dance floor at Shenanigans on Water Street in Eau Claire, or Trader and Trapper, and the home of 3 for 1. Yeah, there was a lot of dancing to Def Leppard. We got to get closer to Carolyn's age here. Okay, here we go.
It's okay.
1998, the Backstreet Boys gained a competitor when a bunch of young punks called NSYNC came along with this one. Okay, have we put Carolyn on a dance floor yet? No. Even have dance floors and bars when you were going to college?
Even in Arkansas, yes.
Okay. All right. Good. Just wanted to check here. Obviously, the anniversary, January 20th is the anniversary of a ton of presidential inaugurations. John F. Kennedy, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, so many others. Kamala Harris becoming the first female vice president. And then we'll close with Meatloaf's "I'd Do Anything for Love."
Oh, gosh.
Because he passed away a year ago at the age of 74. As he plays in the background, we thank Carolyn Fiddler, as she does every week, to make me feel so extremely old, but also fill me in on what to look for political headlines in the new week. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Always appreciate a little ray of sunshine now and then, rather than just having to hear me dribble on for an hour. In fact, to help me interrupt my dribbling in the next hour, State Representative Lisa Subek previews the State of the State. You're up north.